Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Buliwa Gabaza, and for today, we are in the world of banking. It's a world that we have explored on many occasions on this platform. But for today, we are going to be talking to one of the biggest names in banking globally, that is Barclays, and we're going to be getting a sense of their business in the region, in South Africa, and maybe just getting a little bit of a sense, around the strategy. We are joined by Amol Prabhu, who is the CEO for South Africa and also market head for Africa over at Barclays. Amol, greetings to you today.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for having me.
So, I think a good place for us to start is, the easy stuff, right? And when I say the easy stuff, I mean Barclays is one of those names that is quite synonymous with banking, long history in the region, and long history in a country like South Africa. Maybe you could give us some context to say in 2024, when we think about Barclays in the region, what are we looking at?
Sure. And before I specifically answer that question, let me just step back probably a few centuries as well at the same time. So you may or may not know, so Barclays as a history has been operating in financial services for over 330 years. I was actually reminded the other day we're older than the United States.
Oh, wow.
And we've been operating on the continent supporting clients for over 100 years.
Yeah.
And I think obviously during that time, quite naturally, business models change and adapt as countries and economies change and adapt.
Yeah.
And but we now, as of 2024, we have an office here in Johannesburg. We cover investment, private and corporate banking.
Yeah.
We have a strong team here that interplays and works with our teams globally. Just to unpack how we actually got here. So I think maybe many of your listeners are thinking, well, Barclays, didn't you own Absa and then you separated from Absa? What happened there? So back in 2016, our then CEO took the strategic decision to separate from Absa. That was driven more off the back of regulatory reasons and financial accounting reasons, which I won't go into the detail of. But in essence, the decision was actually not just an Africa one. It was a global one where now we actually focus on retail banking in the UK and in the Crown Dependency, so Jersey, Guernsey, Isle of Man. We don't do retail banking anywhere in the world. So not only Africa, but nowhere else in the world. But what our global group CEO early this year, so Venkat, as he's known, has basically articulated is, we are very focused as a firm across five businesses. So we have our retail business, as I've just mentioned.
Yeah.
And to give you a sense of scale on that, over 40% of the London mortgage bond market is, and prime and super prime is handled through Barclays. One in two adults in the UK is a Barclays client. And 60% of the UK's GDP goes through a Barclays system. So we're very deep and strong in that area. Investment banking, we bought, took over Lehman Brothers in the US in the 2009 global crisis. We're very global in terms of what we do around investment banking, including what we do here in South Africa. And also we have our corporate banking that supports our investment banking in terms of those types of products, working capital facilities, trade finance, etc. Our fourth business is our US consumer business, and that's our credit card business effectively, which covers, and we have partnerships with entities like Gap, JetBlue, which is a US airline, etc. And we are the bank behind those credit cards. And last but not least, we have our private bank and wealth management business. And part of my role is really to run and develop and grow our private banking business here on the continent and more broadly, which I can certainly talk to you about. But why have I given you that long introduction and why have I discussed those five businesses?
Yeah.
It's principally because those businesses, their products, the clients we serve, the geographies we operate those businesses in are extremely diverse. And that builds in a phenomenal amount of stability. So when I talk to clients here in Africa and here in South Africa, and I say, you know, what do you think of Barclays? What comes to mind when you think of the brand? And you've mentioned obviously history already, but a critical part of that is also stability. We've been around for three centuries plus, and we've seen the challenges that some global banks, such as Credit Suisse, have faced quite recently. And the fact that stability is critical for a lot of our clients. So history, stability, and I think also the other aspect is very much around independence. So we are an independent British global bank. When it comes to South Africa itself, and just even more broadly, so we're very, very focused on Anglophone Africa.
Yeah.
South Africa, Kenya, Nigeria, Ghana are all strategic markets for us, absolutely critical to our development. What do we do in those markets? So we're focused across private investment and corporate banking. And importantly, we're helping corporates and high net worth and ultra high net worth clients with their global needs. And we're helping our global clients looking for access into the continent. Why have we focused on those countries?
I think that's the question people want to hear.
The main reason actually is mainly brand recognition.
Yeah.
So many of the individuals we deal with in those countries, they've typically spent some time abroad, particularly the UK. Could be they studied there during varsity. They've worked there. They live there in some capacity. And frankly, I think it's the best part of my job. I meet these clients and they'll say to me, "Oh, Amal, don't worry. You know, I've been a Barclays client for 60 years. You know, I think I've still got my student account in London." You know, I honestly don't want to tell them that's probably been closed down quite a few decades ago. But that connection, that almost emotional connection with the brand is extremely strong. And so I never really have a conversation with clients around who is Barclays and what do we do? The conversation is always focused around, okay, Barclays, how can you help me? How can I help you? How can we support you? And again, when we look at our clients, and particularly in the private banking space, we look intergenerational. So we're looking to support, you know, if I could put it, the grandmother and the grandfather, who are often the wealth creators. They could be living in Joburg, they could be living in Plett or Cape Town or whatever. They normally have one child in South Africa, another in London, another in Dubai, etc. So they're often global families, and it's making sure that we can help and support them with their global needs. Could be purchasing a property in London, it could be supporting them with their overseas investment portfolio.
Yeah.
And we look at things, our wealth philosophy as a firm, we really, rather than talk products, we talk philosophy. And what do I mean by that? I mean, we will often sit with clients and we will talk to them, and sometimes with their older children as well, so intergenerational, and we sit there often around the kind of in the lounge or the dining room table.
Yeah.
And we will say, look, you know, we often see things such as, what's the liquidity you need at the moment for your life, your lifestyle and your family in general? So one is liquidity. Second bucket is lifestyle. So going forward over the next 3, 4, 5, 10 years, how do you see your lifestyle growing and evolving? What do you need to think about? Is it varsity fees? Is it your son or daughter is getting married and X, Y, and Z is happening, etc.? So we look at the lifestyle bit of the equation, and then there's legacy. So for many clients is, you know, what do they want to leave behind? How do they want to leave it behind? It could be within the family itself, but it could be also in terms of a foundation, in terms of philanthropy, etc. So all families are very different, which frankly is probably why I love the job so much, because you understand so much about different families. And the way we operate as a firm is, yes, we have a number of bankers on the ground, but as I mentioned at the beginning, our entire focus really is global and cross-border and overseas.
Yeah.
So we can bring to families here in South Africa and elsewhere on the continent, or even the big corporations and the big companies, a real sense of what is happening in the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Also, What are other families in your same socioeconomic bracket? What are they doing? Yeah. What are they thinking about? You know, as parents, everyone's worried about their children and what's happening going forward for them. It doesn't matter whether you're in India, you're the Middle East, or you're in Africa. It's the same conversation. So we can certainly give them views on global trends and what they're looking to do and what real value there is. Yeah. So it's a very, very, very interesting space to be in. I think the two other points I would just make is, one is a question I often ask. I get two questions asked often by clients. One is the relationship with Absa. Yeah. And we are, since we announced our separation as of August 2022, we're entirely separate from Absa. We have no shares. We don't own any shareholding in Absa. We certainly wish them well on their journey, and we're obviously on our own journey. And I think the second question I often ask, which is a fair question, is Amal, great to see you here in South Africa. Great to hear the story on the continent. But how committed really are you? How committed is Barclays?
Actually, before we get to the commitment piece, I wanted to just check, because the private wealth space in South Africa is, at least in my view, you know, quite a contested space. There are a number of players, and almost all the big banks, you know, are trying to cater to, you know, to that, you know, line of the market in one way or the other. Competitive advantage wise, you know, outside of the brand, is it the flow out and into, you know, Africa and South Africa? Or is it, you know, just the fact that from a trends point of view, there's certain things that your high net worth or ultra high net worth individuals are perhaps doing in the UK. And then, you know, there's a way to filter down some of that knowledge into the rest of your franchises. Like, how do you compete and stand out in the space?
So I think my first comment is that there are many banks, both here in South Africa, but also in the likes of Kenya and Nigeria and Ghana that I've mentioned are our strategic markets. They're also very good banks. So credit to them. I think they, a number of them are extremely good. However, I think we as a firm have been very thoughtful around how we operate, where we operate, and most importantly, where we add value to clients. And, you know, I'm kind of partly relaying, you know, my life story. So I've been with the firm for over 20 years now. Initially in London, then Hong Kong, Dubai, and now in Johannesburg. But when the announcement was made that we were separating from Absa, I ended up doing a lot of work around what our Africa strategy should be. And I am now effectively executing on the strategy that I formulated and got signed off at a board level within Barclays. And what I really did was I met probably about 150 of our high net worth, ultra high net worth clients, corporations, et cetera. And I asked them some pretty simple questions, which was, when do you use Barclays? Why do you use Barclays? What do we do well? Who else do you use, and what do they do well? And if you get answers and collate answers to those simple questions, because the reality is we are a service client-centric business. So we need to be offering and doing things that clients want to use us for. So I think our proposition is very, very tailored for clients. We do not compete locally with the local banks in terms of the local work that we do. So if you came to me and said, Amal, please build me a JSE stock portfolio. Please help me finance a house in Plett. I'll say, actually, Barclays doesn't do that. I can give you the names of five very good banks with very good bankers that would be all over that for you. Yeah. But if you say, actually, I want to build a global investment portfolio in hard currency, I would like to purchase a property in London because I know my son's going to be doing varsity there in 10 years' time. We do those kind of things for you. And it's interesting. So you could be living in Johannesburg. Your entire family is in Johannesburg. Your entire assets are in Johannesburg. And we as Barclays will give you a sterling mortgage bond on a UK property with none of your assets or you physically being in the UK. There are very, very few banks, if any, that can do that, right? So you ask for differentiation. That's the type of differentiation. I think the other bit on differentiation is, particularly in the UK, but more widely, the UK, we do 1,000 mortgage bond applications a week. So when clients will, sometimes clients or mortgage brokers will come to me and say, Arnold, you know, X South African bank is offering this, and this as a mortgage product. Can you match it? Can you beat it? Whatever. And I'll often say, you know, X bank may be offering the client 50% LTV. We can offer 75. X client may be offering a mortgage of LIBOR plus 200 basis points. We can do LIBOR plus 100. X bank is offering a 3-year deal. We can do 3, 5, 7, 10. Take your pick. What would you like? So the variety that we can offer, be it in the investment space, the credit space, the banking space, treasury deposits, cash, etc., is very, very strong. So I always encourage clients to look around because I want to do the best by the client. But I think our proposition is extremely compelling. And I think when you link our proposition with our history, with our stability, with our independence, I mean, it's interesting, and I found this myself living in Johannesburg. When you're 5,000 miles away from your hard-earned money, the bank where your money is better be stable.
Yes.
And the banker who's looking after your money better know what they're doing. Yeah. So that relationship is absolutely critical. And look, a lot of clients will say to me, you know, Amal, you know, and a lot of the commercial world is focused on, you know, oh, you know, my investment portfolio, it grew by 8%, not 10%. It did. Your fees are X, your fees are Y, there's this, there's that. But I often say to them, you know, what is equally important, the commercials are important, of course they are. But what is equally important is, do you get peace of mind when you go to bed at night? Do you actually sleep well knowing that your private banker is taking care of
your needs.
Of your needs and your wealth? Yeah, that's what's really critical.
Very keen to get a sense of, because we've spent quite a bit of time talking about the high net worth and ultra high net worth individuals. But the other piece that you mentioned was the corporate piece,
yes.
Right? Are you able to give us a sense of what the pie chart looks like in terms of where you are getting more business in the region? Is it more the corporate clients? Is it more, you know, the individuals and tailoring?
Look, I think it's actually, I think the positive aspect is all businesses are doing well.
Yeah.
And it's not that one business is doing fantastically, having a fantastically greater share of the pie than another business. I think all businesses are doing well because, again, they're catering to different needs. I think the added aspect is that, particularly on the investment banking side, we see a lot of business with South African and African clients looking global. Could be M&A activity, capital markets activity, but it's also global clients, our big global clients coming and looking at the continent and wanting to do things in the continent. And obviously, we want to support them on that journey as well. So for that particular part of the business, there's quite a good split between clients coming in and clients looking globally for their financing and strategic needs. And I think the other point I should mention to you is not all markets are the same. So, you know, we are South African based, which is extremely strong and is growing. There's a lot of connectivity, particularly into the UK and particularly into Europe. When you also look at places like, and I think there's a similar notion with West Africa around that as well. If you look at East Africa, obviously there's a lot of what we call NRI, so non-resident Indian families there as well. multi-generational businesses, et cetera, which we support. And again, yes, they look into the UK, they look to the US, but also they look into Dubai and India and Singapore, et cetera. So what it's what we call the corridors. So there are global corridors around the world where the firm has major presence. We're significant in Dubai. We have private investment and corporate banking there. The same with India, same with Singapore. So all of the key hubs around the world, we can provide that depth of connectivity for our clients. And many clients we have, particularly if they're family businesses, yes, they have their personal wealth needs and they are CEO, chairman, CFO of their own companies, but also they end up having their business needs as well. Yeah. So the view is once a client comes into the Barclays ecosystem, you know, the Barclays world is their oyster and they have multiple businesses within which we can support them. You know, and we've had a number of situations, number of South African clients. One example where client's got a very, very strong business here in South Africa coming out of Johannesburg, wants to expand and have an international base in the UK, not in London, actually, outside of London. You know, and I still remember I was sitting in his boardroom with his board. We were talking about this and I made one phone call literally while I was in the boardroom to the head of our Midlands business and said to the relevant person, you know, got a key client here in South Africa. He's going to be in the UK in a couple of weeks. He's looking at the Midlands to do A, B, C and D. Can you meet him? Can you spend time with him? Can you introduce him to the local authority people, the right people to meet? He was thinking of buying a factory, doing X, doing Y. So now if you think about it, that's not banking. Yeah, that's not banking. That's not a banking product, but that's relationship. And that's where I think people need to remember that if you are looking to provide a world-class service, if you're looking to provide a world-class service, you want to be doing that. You need to be focused on doing that and providing that in the best way that you can. And it goes outside the area of banking. It's about being there, creating, being what we call internally within Barclays, consistently excellent. Yeah, being available to clients, providing them the best service you can, linking in the other parts of the firm, and making sure that they get the best experience that they can.
You know, there's one out of all the corridors that you were talking earlier on about corridors and, you know, different areas of... you were talking about corridors earlier on, different areas, you know, of linkages to and from the African continent. And like you said, there are a number of different areas. You know, there's a Dubai connection, there's a UK connection. I want to focus on the UK one because there's a lot of interest and traffic, you know, that flows between the continent and the UK specifically. Yes. Especially when you look at countries like your South Africa and, you know, Nigeria, you know, there's lots of linkages, you know, between those. Where is the continent wise though the perception would be that you're going to see the most activity being with the, let's say, your SA UK, let's say, corridor, but you know, maybe you could shed some light around what the actual activity looks like. You know, is it more in terms of where you're seeing, I guess, the most chatter, the most activity? Is it UK, Nigeria, UK, South Africa, UK, Kenya? Like,
okay. I mean, look, it's a difficult question. I mean, I think the reality and the good news is there's a lot of activity in all of those corridors. I think that's for a couple of reasons. So I think first of all, it's also a relative conversation. So if I'm thinking about global investors, for example, they're looking around the world and the world's a tricky place. And there are some conflicts, wars, challenges happening in various parts of the world. But, you know, there's a lot of positivity that I can say, particularly around South Africa at the moment. formation coalition of the GNU, what's going to happen over time, and how that's going to play out. You know, there's a number of CEOs, including myself, who've put forward the CEO pledge around. So one is globally, people are increasingly looking at South Africa and a number of other countries within Africa. Second is, you know, on a private sector level, there's a CEO pledge that's been made, particularly in South Africa, and Barclays is one of the institutions that's made that pledge in order to help support the growth. And I think that's quite powerful to get CEOs to do that and really invest in the country and in the growth. And what we're seeing is a lot of South Africans are coming back, or certainly I think you've mentioned previously around remittances and everything else, are looking to bring money back in order to invest in the country. And I think that's a very positive dynamic in terms of what's happening in country.
All right. Now, it's a very interesting, what you call this, I guess, aspect around that. And the reason I'd asked about that is because, you know, to your earlier point about your GNU, all of this stuff, when it's happening, that election is happening, and then the formation of that type of structure, you know, there's a lot of thought that, you know, that's the type of thing that's going to increase investment activity and that type of thing. But when we then have a chance to talk to people such as yourselves, you know, that get to interact with people, you know, from global and making the connections with the local, you know, you get to actually see on the ground whether some of those things are materializing.
No, they are. Look, certain things take a bit of time, yeah. So there's a need of a bit of patience. But is the conversation positive? Are investors who know the you got to be careful when you say the continent, because what I really mean by the continent is specific countries within the continent. And I can speak knowledgeably about Anglophone because that's what we focus on. Less so about elsewhere, to be open with you. But I think also in terms of our franchise, we are seeing either investors who know emerging markets and who have invested in Africa are asking, and South Africa particularly, are asking more questions around increased investment, which is positive. We also have a situation where other emerging market investors who historically maybe didn't focus on Africa so much, South Africa, et cetera, are now asking more questions about, okay, what's actually happening there? What are the opportunities, et cetera? And I think particularly with South Africa, it's quite unique in a way because it's very multi-sector. Yes, you've got NatRes, metals mining, et cetera, but also you've got healthcare, telcos, FMCG, industrials. You've got a variety of sectors which investors can actually get involved in. So I agree with you. There's a lot of talk and rhetoric on a political level, as it were, etc. But am I seeing change on the ground? Am I seeing investors interested, etc., etc.? The answer is simply yes. And long may it continue.
I think we're all hoping that, know, it continues from that point of view. I think as we are, you know, about to land the conversation then, Amal, earlier on, we were about to touch on the commitment, you know, of Barclays on the continent. And that was one of the reasons why I sort of veered off the track a little bit, because it was to almost get a sense of what are the elements on the ground that you, as someone who is looking after the business in the region, have to be accounting for, have to be thinking about? You know, is it just the individuals? Is it the corporates? What are the needs that you're looking at? And to your point just now about the fact that when we talk about Africa, at least from a Barclays point of view, it's not the whole continent.
Yeah.
You've strategically decided on a couple of key markets. And I'm pretty sure that some of those markets almost work, you know, hub and spoke in a way. To say, in terms of, you know, the commitment, what informs your decision to actually double down on the market? What type of activity do you tend to look at? Or what type of questions do you get asked first you know, before you decide, okay, fine, you know, maybe there's a possibility of either opening a new franchise or at least dedicating more resources or opening up more product lines
So look, I think we did an incredible amount of work. And I personally did probably about a year's work on strategy within the firm, looking at how we can best serve our clients, be they high net worth, ultra high net worth corporates on the continent. So we haven't come to these decisions lightly. There's been a lot of thought process that's gone through. While I mentioned that South Africa, Kenya, Ghana, and Nigeria are our strategic markets, and I'm talking more sub-Saharan, but obviously Egypt is there. Also as a strategic market for us. I should at least mention them. But also there are other Anglophone countries that we do look at, the Ugandas, the Zambias, etc. So, but what drives that? What drives that principally are aspects such as are clients likely to want to use us in those countries for what we are offering? Also, we're very much of a view that we want to support clients across multiple businesses. So it's not just, oh, private banking's going into X country or investment banking's going into Y country. There has to be an ability for all businesses to be able to operate and work and support clients in those countries. But the honest truth is, if you even look at the four or five strategic markets that I've mentioned, there's a lot to do. I mean, there's an incredible amount of work to do. So there's also the argument of actually not spreading yourself too thin. You need to be available and working hard with clients in country. And while what I'm saying rolls off the tongue very easily, one has to remember that that it takes hard work, and being able to support clients, and it's what I call a high touch business. You know, you need to be around clients, you need to be supporting clients, you need to be there for clients. Often those clients, again, be they corporates or be they individuals or families, have global needs. So you have to make sure you're connecting with clients. So it's often with clients, it's multi-generational. Often it's multi-product, multi-business, multi-location, that's a lot of multis, right? And to get that right takes a lot of coordination internally and a lot of hard work, and to do it very, very well. So actually, my comment often back to people who are saying, oh, Amal, why aren't you here, or why aren't you there, or why aren't you doing this, or why don't you do that, is actually what we've got in our hands at the moment is more than enough. Yes, we've got runway in all of the countries that I've mentioned. We've got more to do, and we want to do more.
All right. And it's actually very interesting because I can only imagine that when it comes to looking at the continent, because no two countries are the same, and African markets tend to not be homogenous, and it tends to be very different regimes, especially when it comes to the level of regulation and also what the regimes are around the movement of assets, taxation, and, you know, all of these different things that the educated people such as yourselves have to sit, you know, because someone will have global needs, but your global needs come with global problems. Right. So it's always very interesting just to understand how, you know, you navigate you know, something like that. And one of the things that I always find interesting, because even just doing business intracontinental, right, tends to come with, you know, a lot of complexity. And I can only imagine what it must be like when you take that aspect, but you also then, you know, put in an intercontinental type of lens on there. And as a bank, you've almost given a promise to your client to say, we can do this for you. One way or another, we'll move whatever mountain needs to be moved and get it done.
Yeah. I mean, to manage expectations, some mountains can't be moved. So I do hear what you're saying, and you've raised a very, very good point, which is really around aspects such as risk, governance, controls, And making sure from a cross-border international perspective that we are doing things in the right way. So not just obviously right by our clients, but also right by our regulators, be they our home regulators of the UK and the US, be they the Saab and the FSCA here in South Africa and elsewhere. So, of course, we are extremely mindful, and I am extremely mindful of all of those things to make sure that we are running a very strong, sustainable and stable business. So absolutely critical. And you know, what I always think about is the three R's. So reputation, risk and controls, revenue, in that order. Yeah, because your reputation as a firm, and it's not just Barclays, it's any firm, is everything. So you want to be doing the right thing in the right way to build. You know, we've been on the continent for 100 years. I would like us to be on the continent for at least another 100 more. Now, I won't be around, but someone else will be. And hopefully the baton I pass on will be in the business will be in a stronger shape than when I first found it a number of years ago, or when I first took it over, as it were. So you're absolutely right. We need to be very, very conscious about what we're doing. But again, we are very, very focused on what I call quality, not quantity. I say no a lot, right? I do, because...
That's a nice problem
to have. Yeah, well, yeah, I don't, because the thing is... And again, being very open with your listeners, et cetera, is we don't do everything for everyone everywhere. We don't. And I'm very open with clients to say X, Y, and Z we can do. We're world class at it and we'll deliver it for you. But A, B, and C, we're not so good at, or we don't really do. But I can recommend three other banks who are very good at doing that. And I always, you know, I believe in collaboration and partnership. So as I've mentioned earlier in our discussion, you know, a lot of respect for a lot of the local banks who operate here, and a lot of very, very good bankers that I know within those institutions. And I'm more than happy to refer business to them, because if we don't do it, again, it comes back to you want the client to have a good experience. And the last thing I want them is to have a bad experience with Barclays. So if it's things that we are not in our sweet spot, we don't do, or we don't do that well, I'm actually going to say, actually, you should go somewhere else, which sounds odd, but is the truth, because you want to build, I mean, we haven't used the word trust, but you have to build trust with, you know, the families that you work and operate in, the CEOs, the CFOs, the chairmen that you deal with. It is absolutely critical to build that. And, you know, in the world of it, I know you mentioned earlier that you do a lot of tech, et cetera, and, you know, digital payments and X, Y, the rise of digital banking is excellent. You know, it's hugely positive in terms of more people can come within the banking sector. Payments and other almost administrative things you can do very quickly. The ability to gather information about what a bank is doing and what products it offers is very great. But let me tell you that when it comes to discussing, you know, your family's wealth, your long-term view, etc., digital gets put to one side. You want to be sitting with the banker in the room and the specialist, you know, our mortgage bond specialist who's done 40 years in real estate, our investment specialist who follows day-to-day the global markets and knows exactly what's going on with the Barclays investment portfolio options, our treasury specialist who does banking products. It could be our, you know, and your private banker who's meant to bring that all together. And the other very, very important team we have is wealth advisory, we don't do tax advice, we don't do legal advice, but we have a team of specialists, ex-lawyers, ex-tax specialists, etc., who will often sit and talk to clients about liquidity, lifestyle, legacy, as I mentioned before, the three buckets. How do they see their life going forward? How do they see their children's life going forward? And look, if we're doing it gets super interesting, because I'll often say to clients, and it's the type of question that parents never want to think about, let alone talk about. But I'll say, you know, I was with a client last week whose daughter's getting married. And they're from a very wealthy family. And I'll ask the question, so what happens if she gets divorced? Yeah. Now, no parent ever wants to think about that. They always want their child to be living happily ever after. But if we're doing our job properly as a private bank, we are thinking of different options that could play out. And we're saying to, you know, often the mum and the dad, have you thought about this? And what protections are in place? And X, Y, and Z, you know. And so it's very, very incumbent on us to give very, very high quality bespoke advice to family after family and make sure we are supporting them in their journeys. And also, frankly, thinking 5 years, 10 years ahead, thinking of questions that either they haven't thought of or they don't really want to talk about, but I kind of force it on the table, you know. And we've had situations where clients have said to me, Amal, thank God we discussed this 3 years ago, all right, because of X has happened or Y has happened. So you want to be very proactive. And I think a lot of clients really, really value that advice. So look, building trust, establishing a very, very high quality relationship. I always say to bankers, are you on your client's speed dial? How often they call you? Yeah. How often they call you just to discuss stuff? So we're not talking products. We're saying just to discuss, oh, Amal, I had this idea. What do you think? Yeah. Oh, my daughter mentioned this to me. What do you think? X, Y, to be able to be that sounding board, that trusted advisor, I think is absolutely critical. And in fact, I'll give you a very good example. I heard the other day that, so one of the families in the UK, we have been banking that family in our private bank for over 200 years. We are on the ninth generation. Now, that's what you call private banking. Yeah, that's private banking. Intergenerational across not only decades, but centuries. And that's what I want the same for our Africa franchise.
Yeah. And I think where I'll end off is perhaps a follow-up to, you know, the commitment question. We have a corporate and investor type of audience. And when you talk anything to around commitment, one of the big things that people want to know is, okay, what is the level of investment or how do we judge how serious Barclays is in the region? So understanding, of course, that there's probably sensitivities, whatever you can share with us on that front.
I'll give you one data point, which I think knocks it on the head. And I've had this question quite a bit over, you know, my last 5 years here in South Africa. And it's a fair question. So back in, I think it was end of 21, beginning of 22, when Credit Suisse was having difficulties, they put up, in inverted commas, their Africa private client business across nine African countries, effectively up for sale, yeah. And wanted to exit those clients. Yeah. We entered into a bidding process for that, which we won. And the way that worked was that if you're the Credit Suisse client and I'm the Credit Suisse banker, I would say to you, I'm really sorry, but you live in Johannesburg, Nairobi, Lagos, and you're going to be offboarded. You're a great client, but you're going to be offboarded by the firm. But I actually recommend that you move your wealth to Barclays. And we have had a great relationship over the years. I am also moving to Barclays and I will take care of you there. So we lifted effectively a 20-person team. There was half that were bankers and half were part of the wider team across Dubai, Zurich and the UK and London. Huge lift. And those clients didn't have to move across to Barclays. There was no obligation for them to move, but a significant proportion of them did. The way I describe it is, for the private banking perspective, we did 5 years growth in 18 months. But actually, while commercials are always important and they help, what was more important for me as head of the Africa business was that this deal went right up to our group CEO. It was signed off at that level. And it really showed a commitment from right at the top of the firm that we want to grow in Africa. We want to develop the business. We want to be seen as one of, if not the leading bank, international bank in Africa, helping clients, be they corporates, investors, high net worth, ultra high net worth families, whatever it may be, those types of individuals with their global, international, overseas needs, we want to be there. So, you know, that transaction would never have happened if my own senior management and others within the firm were not absolutely supportive of the franchise. You know, and, you know, touch wood, or holding thumbs, as I think they say here, things will continue to grow from strength to strength, and not just for Barclays, for our clients, and even particularly for South Africa in general. I mean, look, Springboks are doing well, and let's hope the whole country does well.
Definitely. And on that note, that's how we end off today's discussion. It has been a really great one. Just talking to Amal around what's happening in the universe of Barclays on the African continent, giving us a view of, the journey that Barclays has taken on the continent, and especially what's happened, you know, in the years since. He says that's probably the top question he's asked, you know, is to say what's happened after, you know, after APSA. And he said that it's now completely separate, no more shareholding, completely separate businesses. But the thesis is that there's still a place for them on the African continent, particularly, when it comes to your high net worth, ultra high net worth, as well as your corporate, types of clients. And he says that the biggest point of differentiation is their ability to take care of, certain needs without necessarily having someone being, let's say, for example, in the UK. I think the example that he gave is someone who's sitting in the in South Africa who wants to perhaps purchase a property in the United Kingdom. That is something that, that they can do, quite well. And it's a capability that they've built in, into their bank. Also just saying that there's a lot of other things that they can't do. And he says that he has the nice problem of having to say no to people periodically, to say that, for certain things, this is not our area of expertise. They are competent banks, on the other side. Also just talking about commitment in the region, what does it mean? I think the big thing that he spoke about is the year that was spent studying the market in Africa to say, what does Barclays actually want its place to be based on what, the needs are from their top clients in the region. I think he mentioned 130 or so clients that you spoke about, that you spoke to, to gauge, what's actually happening and what are the needs that people are looking for in the market. And, ended up with a business that is primarily focused in South Africa, in Kenya, Ghana, as well as Nigeria. Obviously, there's presence in, countries such as Egypt, but it's Anglophone countries that they're looking to really step into. And he's also, giving us some insight, ending off about the fact that when we see moves such as an election, because 2024 was a huge election year around the world, and in South Africa, I think the ANC was one of the few incumbent parties that managed to sort of, maintain itself, because around the world, over 70 elections that happened around the world, incumbents did not do well in this round of elections. And this government of national unity has actually started seeing results on the ground where he's actually getting more interest and, people just asking questions, being more curious about what's happening in South Africa. And he says those are some of the proof points to say, when you hear of these announcements and these activities up here, on the ground, this is what it's actually, you know, actually resulting in. So that's been it. It has been a great discussion. We were talking to Amal. He is the head of South Africa as well as Africa, you know, over at Barclays Bank. Amal, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me, and thank you very much to your listeners.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. I've been Mudiyo Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So from myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.